No, I was saying that there was a volunteer in a rural area, and a U.S. bomber had returned from a strike, still had bombs, and since they can't land with them, of course...
They really can't.
No. They had to drop them, and since they, you know, it's pretty difficult to know where you are and where you're not, he got dropped over his village in Laos, and he had just left, and when he went back, the villagers felt that he had called in a strike.
Oh.
So, you know, these kinds of things had to heighten the awareness of the rural development volunteer much beyond what was happening at Dondok, even though intellectually we were all involved.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, they were living it more on a day-to-day basis out in the boonies.
Well, I mentioned that for two reasons. One, because I remembered what I forgot. And second, I'm reminded of some volunteers that I've spoken to. And what I forgot was basically if the resignations in 67 of the Vietnam IVS leadership had heightened, increased awareness by all volunteers in Laos of the war per se. But I'm also remembering discussions I've had with some Dondok volunteers who really, you know, as if I didn't interrupt them to ask them questions about the war, might not have ever mentioned it. You know, like they were in Malaysia. Or let's something even more peaceful, you know, some other country even more peaceful. And
that may be true.
I find that just astounding.
Does.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't understand it. And I'm, you know, looking for any
you may be right. Like I say, intellectually they knew where they were at and what was happening around them and so on. But the Dondok volunteer, I think, probably was not confronted on a daily basis. And the only reason that I was is because, like I say, job-wise, I was...
Yeah, your responsibility.
To go, you know, and be in conversations about what was going on and things like that. So I had a heightened awareness about it. But I'm sure the ones that were actually living out there on a daily basis were even much more aware of where they were.
Yeah, I just can't understand how the... Someone who's, obviously, if you're not confronted with a war situation on a daily basis, it's not going to be as pressing in your life. But I was so surprised how some people sort of totally blocked it out from their awareness.
Yeah.
You know.
Because it was a nice place to live. And go to school and teach.
Uh-huh.
Young minds and
eager students. Suppress that little bad part.
Yep.
Okay. It's
and you know the bus went into the compound several times a day. You go in and have a hamburger and sit by the pool and drink a milkshake or go to the TX and buy you name it. So.
Was Malia in administrative position or APOP? There were two individuals, M-A-L-I-A. There was a Jim and a Tom.
Oh.
One was in Laos and one was in Vietnam, and I forget which, whether it was Tom.
Malia was I guess he was an ACOP after I left, or just about the time I was leaving. I think he took over for Ken Ullum.
Okay.
So I did overlap with him, but I think for a short period of time, yes.
All right.
He was a volunteer all of the time I was there as well.
Jim Malia. Yeah. Because it was Tom who was in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Jim is in Knoxville, by the way.
My memory serves me, adopted a child or two from Laos, I think.
That I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know whether he married, but I think he picked up some children there.
Yeah, because I heard from another volunteer who would have been a volunteer after your time that Jim was very concerned about cutting back on the amount of use of PX and the et cetera, et cetera.
Another big topic for conversation.
Okay.
But not widely, not as widely held by the volunteers. I think they liked the PX. They, you know, they didn't like that they were using it, but they certainly liked the fact that they could get peanut butter and steaks and you name
uh-huh,
it.
Uh-huh.
There were a few hardcore people who insisted to buy only on the down at the morning market and, mm-hmm. and get by with local stuff and so on.
Yeah.
And there were another group of people who said, well, gee, we shouldn't be using the PX, but we're. And then probably still the majority who...
And so what the heck?
Did, yeah.
Yeah, in moderation, all things right. are wise.
But, you know, almost all the volunteers you saw beside the pool one time or another or used the, what mm-hmm. they call it, the AC or something like that, where you could get a decent hamburger and french fries. And,
uh-huh. Okay. Well, it does seem like something of an issue.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how big or how the fault lines went on it.
I mean, it hit me immediately. I mean, coming from a volunteer situation in Ecuador where you lived on $100 a month and you lived off what you could buy in the local market and lived in a house that was whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was very idealistic about that thing. But I soon didn't have a lot of problem about going down and buying at the PX myself. But I mean, I intellectually I said, geez, we shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, no.
But it's pretty hard to get away from it.
Well, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I do remember that, you know, in the Philippines, you know, even though there were plenty of PXs,
mm.
Clark and Subic and mm. for a while Cavite and San Marcelino and all these other bases mm. all over the place. As Peace Corps, I never had the option of going in to any kind of PX whatsoever.
Absolutely.
And the only time I did was up in Hong Kong, the China Fleet Club, which was open to a lot of people. But anyway, so when I heard this for the volunteers, I said, how dare they?
Now,
were I country director, I would say, absolutely no privileges for nobody.
Yeah.
You stay out here and work, you know, and integrate with the population and stuff. And I would have been hated, I think.
Yeah, I think most of us said that at one time or another, but it was, our voices became weaker and weaker. To ourselves even.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand. Okay. It seemed like such a... one big difference between IBS and Peace Corps, that, but such a strange contradiction, because I have the perhaps too romantic image of IBS being first in terms of creation, and therefore should be more pure.
Well, there were a lot of purists in the volunteers in the group we had. There was one who became a monk for a month. We had guys out there in the boonies, and you couldn't, you know, it'd be tough to get them to come in and be civilized for a while, for example, and that kind of thing. There were a couple of volunteers that went off the deep end that we had to physically bring in.
Well, they had mental problems?
Just from isolation.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know that would happen in Peace Corps, where people had to be medevaced home, but the medical is within quotation marks, because
we just brought them into being chunked for a while.
Uh-huh. And they just kind of got their feet again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there was some real toughies there. I think there was, for as soft as the life was in Dondok for the education volunteers, there was... It was probably as tough or tougher out there in the boonies for some of these people than any of the volunteer situations that I had seen in Latin America.
Okay.
And the overlay that with the security situation, and it was tough.
Yeah, yeah, that wouldn't have a daily physical drain, but it would certainly be a psychological pressure. And I would eat at you.
Mm.
And let me pause it here. So it's a real drag, you
mm-hmm.
know, psychologically. I do appreciate that. But shifting somewhat,
mm-hmm.
kind of catching back up to where we were at one point. The programming job in Washington, what was that like? What were you actually doing?
Well, I think there was some feeling, as I remember back on the part of Dick Peters, that some of the things that we had talked about in the days that I had been in Laos in terms of what IBS could and shouldn't be in terms of expanding the financial base, in terms
okay.
of internationalizing,
mm-hmm.
As well as making sure that we weren't just out there placing volunteers, but volunteers would go into slots that really were needed and where they could be training someone. So,
okay.
These were issues that I think were on Dick's important list, plus the fact that size-wise, IBS was considerably down by that time. I think
70,
in the heyday, we were 120, 130 volunteers in Laos. I think Vietnam was about double that, or maybe more, 280, maybe, whatever.
I don't think much more than double. I think it was about 260 was tops.
In the 70s, as my memory had it, we were just over 100 volunteers worldwide. And the cost per volunteer was excruciating. Recruiting costs were sky high. And so it was more than just a program job. We were trying to, he wanted some help in saying, okay, how do we keep the boat afloat?
Yeah.
How do we respond to some of these concerns that we all had several years earlier? And how do we make IBS a meaningful organization, et cetera? And that's what I remember dealing with for the year and a half that I was there.
Uh-huh.
Those kinds of issues. And they were tough because the recruitment process that was put into place was probably good for recruiting the numbers that had to be recruited for Laos and Vietnam. But when you're only recruiting one third of that amount of volunteers, it was very cumbersome and very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Too many people involved, too.
Yeah, so you had to cut back the bureaucracy.
Right. Try to piggyback on other organizations that might have names of people and things like that.
Uh-huh.
But that's what I think. That's where IBS was at that time. That's what I was. That's what I was involved in. But it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember it as being as satisfying in terms of having a beginning and an end and having an idea. I mean, I had an idea what I was supposed to do, but I don't remember leaving at the end of that time saying, gee, I think we really got there. Not even close. But we did attack some of those issues, but I don't remember us.
They're still working on them.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's the crux of, I think, Don's leaving.
Yeah.
You know, some people wanted to try some different things, and he wasn't so much in favor. And because they're going to, I got one letter recently from IBS. Let me pause. This is current business. Got this back on again.
Cool. No, when Don was up here, I talked to him a lot about that because my own organization, we get nothing from AID. And the money is out there. You have to go after it in a different way. You have to have a board of directors that operates in a different way than IBS does. You have to have business people on it. You have to.
Really?
But the money's out there.
So not so much the former volunteers.
No, I think having a volunteer or two on is good in terms of.
But not the whole board.
Right.
Yeah.
In terms of giving it some orientation to make sure it's still true to ideals and so on. But boards of directors, my own is build up people who are just as idealistic in terms of what they want to help.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have corporate contacts that are helpful so that we know how to get into a corporation or a foundation in terms of getting support.
Yeah.
And you got to have that to survive. Otherwise, you have to continue to be dependent on a source like AID, which is just one big blob of money there.
And you get very lazy.
And you get very lazy about it.
Yeah. I know people in academics who've gotten very lazy until Newt came along and trimmed back. And, some programs are in trouble. Others already diversified, and they're just sailing along, beforehand.
But when I was in IBS in Washington, I didn't have the base knowledge to be able to help them at that time. I had some programming experience in terms of knowing what programs ought to look like in the field.
Yeah.
That was a bit more sophisticated than what had been used for volunteers in the past. But I certainly didn't have the experience base to what I can do now in terms of fundraising or doing those kinds of things. And IBS did have a quote-unquote fundraiser at that time who was a former volunteer who was doing something that it's considered non-ethical now. At that time it was legal, probably even considered ethical, but working on a percentage basis, and it was a rather hefty percentage.
I think a lot of grant writers still have percentages.
And but the results were still nil. I don't remember him getting that much that was worth his involvement, nor was it really worth IBS's involvement.
And speaking of those, thinking of one institution that is or has been entirely dependent on the Congress, was just talking to them recently saying, be real careful about hiring your grant writers. They're probably not going to bring in anything. You may actually pay out more in salary than they're going to bring in terms of percentages. So do it yourself. You'll probably do a much better job because you're dedicated.
So again, I think the only thing I can offer in terms of my experience at that time was saying that the issues were important. They were coming to much more of a head at that time than they were at earlier years, but I don't think the answers, I think we were close to the answers.
And as I said before, they still aren't.
Yeah.
Looking back, you did say that because of the deaths that occurred during the time that you were around in Love and Lebanon, that there was a conscious decision made to close back the forward areas and to bring people in. Would that have been sufficient? Was the organization still having enough of an impact?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see there was any real reason to be out in the forward areas other than the fact that AID wanted to be out there so that they could quote-unquote have a presence there.
Yeah.
And they saw the IBS volunteers a cheap labor that could go out there and do it, and certainly had the wherewithal to talk about rice culture and all the other kinds of things that needed to be talked about, and diversification and you name it. But there was no other reason to be there other than that, and they could easily do a good job in much more secure areas, and were doing good jobs in other secure areas where they were talking, working with farmers, or there was even some education people out in the field. There were a few nurses or a few people working in sports programs and various other and sundry things. But
okay, so this was not a reason to consider closing back the whole program?
No.
Yeah.
No. And I think Bob Lovin certainly has to be the one that I think they're pointed to as the one that really was the pusher behind that, and was probably the one that negotiated getting us out
of those hit forward areas.
Yeah.
No, he's told me about one very funny story about renegotiating the contract and using a CIA friend of his to get word back to Washington to put some pressure through Kennedy's office on the State Department to put pressure on the AID in a 24-hour period. and catching, I don't know if it was Mendenhall or his successor,
probably Mendenhall.
Yeah, probably, and saying, hey, you've got some friends. it was a very good story. Looking back, now you've got two volunteer experiences. I'm going to count the administrative experience with IBS as, in a sense, a kind of volunteer experience.
Sure.
So, what did these do for your for you?
Oh, I think the second one
either differently or together, you know, the same.
The first one, I had barely been out of the Midwest, so I guess the first one made me culturally aware to a point that I had never even I never even understood you had to be culturally aware, you know.
Okay.
But opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, geez, there's certainly a lot of people out there living a lot different than the way I was, and that doesn't make them worse or better or anything else. In fact, they're pretty much the same way I am, except they speak a different language and do some things. So the second one expanded on that even further by getting us into an Asian culture. But again, that was not the learning experience. I think the learning experience was dealing with all of the different players, and the players meaning IBS Washington, which weren't necessarily our friends. They were our bosses. They were our mentors. They were whatever. They did support us, but they also gave us a lot of grief. Dealing with AID, a huge, big organization, but they were 500 direct hire people there at that time or some such number. Dealing with a war situation and reading publications, U.S. publications, and seeing how differently it was being reported back in the U.S. in terms of the way we were actually living
and what supposedly reality was.
It was a real eye-opener. Again, I was not a sophisticated, still not a sophisticated person. I think I can handle things in a much more sophisticated way now. But I had to do a lot of learning about how to deal with those various levels of people, and I think that's why it was a real good experience for me, teaching me some hard lessons in life about what to do and how to do it, how to treat other people, and how to get what you want without.
Kind of a political lesson with politics with a small p.
Well, there were some big
and some big p's. Yeah.
So again, that really set me up for some other things. I knew definitely then that I wanted to continue in the international field after that.
Mm-hmm.
Had I not had that second quick out of the U.S. Experience, I might have just gone back to the U.S. and gotten a job somewhere that had nothing to do with it and kept on going.
Yeah.
But this one really sort of cemented the fact that that was the career I wanted for myself.
Confirmed everything else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when we did get back, we quickly looked for something to take us out.
Again.
So.
Yeah. That's interesting, because a lot of people that I've talked to credit their IBS experience for that sort of change.
Well, there were a lot of people. There were a lot of longevity. Lou Wolf, geez, how long was he there? You know, 6, 7, 8 years with AID, maybe even longer.
Galen Beery, long time. He was definitely 6, 7 years.
Steve Green,
through all his things,
was at least a 4, 5, 6 year stint.
One of the two brothers, Gus Carlson.
Gus Carlson. A lot of volunteers that stayed on an extra year, if not two.
Or six.
So, you know, it,
I mean, Gus left in 75.
Yeah. So there was a lot.
He had a good 12 all together.
I think more than, as I remember, even in Vietnam, we had volunteers who were staying around a long time.
Uh-huh.
Mac Thompson stayed on then with AID.
No. Yeah.
Oh, he was a real character. He used to like to go out and jump out of airplanes and parachute.
Oh, no kidding.
And he was told not to do it, and he kept doing it. He'd get himself manifested on a plane, kick out a few rice bags.
And then just slip and fall and happen to have a parachute on, and thank God he was safe.
No, but he stayed on for a good number of years with AID then, too. So we had, you know, I think that was one of the characteristics of the IBS team in Laos, of people just sticking around.
Yeah. Oh, see that. Someone who sticks around for a long time was the Pop Buell. Did you ever get to know him?
I met him once or twice, yeah.
That's about all.
To get to know him, no, it was the same.
Yeah, to get to know, that implies a working relationship, and I know that he already would have been off by himself and with the CIA folks by that time. So I didn't mean that. Yeah. But did you get any impression of him other than superficial?
Idealistic. Certainly, we're almost right up to the end feeling that he had been doing the right thing, and then knowing at the end that he didn't.
Really? You think so?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh.
No, at the end, before he left, he was very upset about the way he felt and that the government had used all of these people that he had held in his confidence and so on.
And had used him, too.
And had used him then, therefore.
Yeah.
He had been the intermediary to get to these people, and that in the end, they were not taken care of.
Yes, that's quite true. Okay, so he did feel that way.
Well, definitely so.
And put blame on the U.S. government for abandoning.
Yeah.
Okay, because I just finished writing a book review of something called, a book called Backfire. I'd recommend it.
Okay.
It's by a fellow named Roger Warner. While I give this ad, I'll pause this here. Yeah, because we're talking about Bill Sullivan
or
William H.
Yeah, we got to know him particularly in a period when Marty Klisch was being listed as missing. And he invited us over to the house several times with Marty's wife, because she was also Latin background, and so she and my wife got along real well. But we found him a delightful person, very easy to talk to. I think that he probably did a better job there than almost anybody else could have probably done under those circumstances. And Pop did his thing. I'm an Indiana farmer type too, and I can understand in his mentality where he was coming from and what he was doing. But I think in the end he felt that he had been used, and unfortunately. There's a funny story about that, and part of my own education in terms of becoming to realize things. One of the volunteers, I think it was Van Court, as I remember it.
Van Court?
Yeah. I think that's his name. He was in one of the forward areas. And a volunteer that I had played a lot of poker with and so on. So I knew him quite well. I mean, it wasn't just that he was a volunteer.
You knew when he was bluffing, huh?
Yeah. And so he had been manifested to go back where he was going, and it was fogged in, and they landed in Sam Tong and came back before he got back to his field. And he said, so I was talking to him, he said, you wouldn't believe what's out there and what I saw. Oh, I says, well, what did you see? It's Court Van something or other. Okay.
Okay.
Court Van...
Ripper. Britain, Colorado.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be Mark's turf.
Yeah. So I said, Court, what did you see? And he says, oh, I can't tell you. I was sworn to secrecy.
Oh, come on.
Excuse my French. Don't give me that shit, Court. I says, we're buddies. I said, we drink beer together. We play poker together. I says, you can tell me, what did you see? He says, you wouldn't believe what I saw. You would not believe.
If you don't want to tell somebody, you don't say something like
we
that.
We had this conversation for about a half an hour. He never did tell me what he saw out there.
Oh, dear. Now, I'm too curious. I'm going to have to go to Britain, Colorado, and look him up.
I don't know. I presume he saw people with green berets on and all kinds of equipment, but he wouldn't actually tell me what he said.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh. No, I thought about that because you said, you know, so many people were sticking around for so many years.
Yeah, but I don't think that's why the people stuck around. I think they stuck around for the Lou Wolf type thing. They just liked it so much there. They liked the people. They liked what they were doing. And they didn't think that there was any place else they could go in the world and have the satisfying job that they were having. That's why I think they stuck around.
Satisfying job or satisfying life?
Both.
And, sense of purpose and enjoying the culture and people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. More so than Ecuador?
I always said that had I gone there first, I might have felt that same thing and stayed there. But I had my language ability in Laos was so limited and French so limited. And my Spanish is native level.
Really? Good.
So I felt I'd better go back to where I could better use my talents. But otherwise, I found it delightful. So did my wife. She loved it.
Just as a personal thing, did you have a baby when you were there?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not until we got we went to back to Latin America.
Because I remember seeing a picture of you in one of those annual report things.
Yeah.
Holding a child.
Yeah.
Okay.
The reason they did that was because I was forever, I did two of those reports and I was forever.
You had a goofy expression on your face.
Yeah, well I was putting funny pictures in of other people and so they decided that they'd get back at me.
That's what that was.
Somebody,
God, I'm going to meet this guy, huh?
Had my wife had her way, we would have adopted the child and brought it home. But,
Yeah. Well, I think I'm kind of running dry on things.
I'm feeling good about what we said and did.
Well, I wanted to ask you, is there something I might have forgotten that you can think of? Even if you do feel good.
No, I think the important points are the difficulties of the situation, the quality of the, if I haven't said it, to the volunteers and the staff, I think was exceptional.
I think you really said it, although I know that you may, that you think it.
And we, in spite of the differences we had with Washington, I think there were some very quality people that were helping us from that end, too. My own youth, I guess I look back at a rather dynamic time, but I think in terms of what was going on in the world, I can't imagine that anybody would describe it as otherwise, and to be part of it, even though there were negative aspects about the war, I look back at the situation with some, I don't know if pride is the right word, but
you can be proud
of being there at that time and seeing what was going on, feeling it. And I think IBS certainly was a first class organization at that time. I have less feel for it now, so I don't know. I think they're doing some good jobs in certain places from what I read in the reports, so I can only assume that it is, but I lost fairly much day-to-day contact with it 10, 12 years ago. Rigby was the other guy's name I was trying to think of, who's now in the Philippines. It was the IBS director for some time that I knew. John Rigby.
What other
he is now, he was IBS director in Washington.
Oh, you mean the executive director.
Yeah, and went on to...
Okay. Yeah.
I knew Rigby because I was in an organization here in New York that was a membership organization, and IBS was as a member.
Oh, okay.
First when Tony Lake was there, and then now with Rigby.
Okay.
So I still had some contact up through 1979, I guess, with IBS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Wrigley would be beyond our area of time.
Certainly some good memories.
Excellent.
And I thank you for the opportunity.
And I thank you for taking the time out.
My pleasure.
Your schedule and coming into the city or whatever.
The timing was good because last year's done and I'm not yet into getting this stuff started.
Good. Let me turn this off then and thank you much.
Okay.